Greetings, film freaks. We are the Podcorn Kernels. Join us as we discuss the hard and often indigestible truths that are at the center of the fluffy and delicious world of cinema.
What's popping, people? Welcome to the Podcorn Kernels podcast. My name is Adam, and joining me in your ear holes is Harry. Say hello, Harry.
Pondlog, when you want your sausage made of duck.
On today's episode, we will be talking about Holy Motors. This is a 2012 film directed by Leos Carax and stars Denis Levon, Eva Mendes and Kylie Minogue. IMDb describes the synopsis as follows. A man boards a limousine to be driven to 9 mysterious appointments. Here is an original song to support the synopsis.
Go. Go.
I feel fucking violated.
Go,
I feel like I can smell it through the mic.
You fart all the time, do it.
Holy Motors, filling quotas, completing tasks. French devoters, story showsters, and creepy masks. What's the meaning? I can't help feeling that I've missed the point. It's like smoking, but not toking, on a fat joint. One man, 9 assignments, a limo. Surrealist, absurdist, shit show. Carax, relax, Carax, relax, Carax, relax, Carax, relax.
Let's start with some facts about the film. Holy Motors was ranked the 16th greatest film of the 21st century in a worldwide critics poll conducted by the BBC.
No.
Yep. Apparently.
Fools.
That fact pisses me off, to be honest. Mm-hmm. To top a list, let alone even be in a list of the top films of the 21st century is a crime.
It's insane.
Yeah, there's nothing about this film that I think, it is prestige filmmaking. It's brilliant. It's a fantastic story. It's a masterpiece. For me, straight off the bat, I thought it was shit.
So they're saying in 22 years gone, this is 16th, ranked 16th in the last 22 years. That's insane.
Think of all the films that have come in the 21st century that are better than this. I would argue most of them.
It's lazy filmmaking.
Well, I don't even consider it filmmaking.
No.
I consider it a self-gratifying, look at how out there I can be, look how strange I am, look how surreal I am, this is my film, watch it.
Well, Leos Carax even said in an interview, he did a Q&A with Eric Conn of IndieWire, and Eric said, you said before that you don't consider yourself a filmmaker. Has Holy Motors changed that? And he went, no, I really don't. It's hard to call myself a filmmaker. I agree with you, Leos Carax.
I completely agree, yes.
I agree with you.
He's not a filmmaker. I've all the films I've seen of his are this and Annette. Mm-hmm. And I consider them to be two of the most difficult films that I've ever watched. Not because of the subject matter, not because it's really gritty or difficult to handle. It's just nonsensical. For me, I like a film that's different. I like a film that's out there. But if I'm spending hours watching a film and I have no concept what's going on, or the concept I do have in terms of Annette, it's just grating and boring and tedious.
Monotone.
Yeah, it pisses me off, man.
But there's no narrative, so it's hard. I think he pulls the walls over people's eyes. So he's known for disliking having to talk about his films. There's a reason for that, I think. Because when he gets asked to signify or make substance of something he's done within his film, he gets annoyed at that question because he doesn't fucking know. Anyone can put their dreams or thoughts on paper and then put it on a film. Anyone. You could wee on a canvas and go art.
Yeah.
This essentially is him. For me, it's him.
And to be quite honest, I'd rather watch you piss on a canvas than spend any more time on Leos Carax's film.
Well, at least you'd be helping an up-and-coming artist.
Well, exactly.
This guy's like, he's successful from laziness. He hasn't got time for plots, narratives or character development. He's just, every shot to him is just, my art.
I've got this niggling feeling that people that say they love Carax's work are lying to themselves. I think they see this thing on screen that's so odd, so absurd, so out there that they like to think that they can dissect it and understand it. I think they're talking nonsense.
It's pretentious.
Yeah, it is the epitome of pretentiousness.
Yeah.
And I don't mind pretentious filmmaking if it's got a point. if only part of the storytelling is pretentious or a particular scene is self-indulgent, I don't mind that. If the story's going somewhere, if the film is a story worth telling. But yeah, Holy Motors and Annette.
He's a bait and switch because the trailers for both films are quite good, quite engrossing. They're like, whoa, what's going on in this film? But like, it's just some of the way, like the way he conducts himself outside of his films. It's like, you don't like to talk about your films. No, I like to talk about real life. But you know, artists like to talk about the film and go, should artists talk? It's just like, you're just trying to be all, you're all trying to be deceptive and stuff and mysterious. But you're not, man.
It's just sound bites from a stereotypical artist.
Oh, yeah.
That doesn't have any real point to what he's saying. He just wants to sound creative.
Yeah.
And I went in this with the best intentions, quite high expectations after seeing how it's been reviewed and acclaimed by so many people. And afterwards, I did think to myself, maybe it's me. Maybe there's something wrong with me in watching this film. I said, because so many people can't be wrong. And then I watched it again and I was like, no, everyone else is wrong. Yeah. I was like, this is shit. He is a shit filmmaker.
But he's not a filmmaker.
Artist or whatever he is.
That's the problem. He should be conducting a 15-minute physical theatre bit outside of Battersea Power Plant. He's a street performer, in my opinion.
Not a feature film director.
He shouldn't be doing films. He even hates the use of digital cameras.
Yeah,
well, don't film your film in digital cameras then.
I think anyone who admires his work, their argument to us or to me specifically would be, oh, you clearly don't understand
it. They smell their own farts.
And 100% and have a great time with it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's an easy thing for them to say for someone who just outright doesn't like it. But when I go in with the best intentions and I still come out of it feeling pissed off. Now, I do actually have a theory what this film is about, and I'll speak to you about that later on in the podcast.
How the hell did you manage that?
But if you're having to do all the legwork in the film and you're ending up telling your own story within the film to entertain yourself, that's a fucking problem. You shouldn't be sitting there going, I'm going to make up this. Oh, he's going to do that so it makes sense in my head. And this means this and that means that. Sure, a director shouldn't hold your hand the whole way through. But a little bit of context, a little bit of point, a little bit of purpose would make it worth watching.
You're right, though. He's a stereotype of that guy in an art studio who sees a vase and says it represents sex.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
Why is a vase not just a vase?
And the thing, people will not dispute it or argue it because they don't want to seem stupid. And I honestly think there's probably a lot of people out there that find value in this film because they are not willing to admit that they don't understand what the fuck is going on.
But anyone can do what he does. Anyone can go, let's put some chimps in this now. Let's just put some monkeys in the film.
Yeah.
Right there.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyone can do that.
Here's an idea, guys. At the end of the film, let's have cars talking to each other. Oh, why? No, it doesn't matter. You don't need to know why they're going to talk.
Don't question my art.
Yeah, they're sentient. They can understand. They've got personalities. They can converse. What's that got to do with the story? Oh, you don't understand. It's bollocks.
Mm.
Anyway, I'll go on to another fact.
It's nice to hear you do that because it's not often that because you're very objective. You look at things for what they are and you're usually quite generous.
Well,
the fact that you are hating on it makes me feel good.
Well, I appreciate that, and I do. Even films that aren't necessarily ones that I would look out for and ones that I would normally enjoy, I can still tolerate, and I can empathise and be like, oh, okay, I get why people would like that.
Mm-hmm.
I've been scratching my head. As I say, I've watched this twice. I've been scratching my head continuously trying to understand, why are people bigging this up? Why is this ranked 16th greatest film of the 21st century? It's mental. It's madness. Anyway,
it's FOMO, isn't it? They're scared of missing out on the craze. And that shocked me. 5 stars, Empire. No way.
No.
No way.
Yeah.
You're losing your mind. It's monotone. The characters are unlikable. It's plotless and there's a wooden doll at the end. Ergo, monkey chimps.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Nonsensical. Leos Carax wrote the part of the supermodel with Kate Moss in mind. They had already been willing to work together in a project that never got made. By the time of filming, though, Moss was about to get married and declined the part that ultimately went to Eva Mendes.
Who she married? Pete Doherty? Or was that before? I can't remember.
I have no idea. But Moss was meant to be acting in it and didn't, and it went to Mendes. It wouldn't matter who was in that role. In the context of the film, Eva Mendes has hardly anything to do. She's statuesque. She sort of stands there looking very beautiful. She plays a model within the film. And she's in the film for, what, 5-10 minutes tops?
Mm-hmm.
So the thought that they wouldn't need a big name like Kate Moss or Eva Mendes. They could have got anybody to play that role.
She gave me a bit of like relief seeing her. It was kind of like being lost at sea and seeing a boat. I was like, oh, some normality maybe.
Well, it's like seeing a familiar face in a foreign land.
Save me.
But yeah, exactly that. I saw her and I was like, okay. Mm. And does she even say a word?
She sings a song. You see a little bit of her nipple. She gets kidnapped by Mert.
One of the characters played by Denis Levant within the film.
He's called Mert, which means shit in French.
Well, this film's Mert. The opening scene was inspired by a tale by E.T.A. Hoffman about a man who discovers a secret door in his bedroom that leads to an opera house.
Oh, it's one of my dislikes. The fact that he put himself in the film. It's so nauseating. Leos Krax is the sleeping man at the start.
It
devastates me.
See, I would rather watch a film about a man that has a secret door that goes to an opera house than watch this.
Yeah, because then it's like being John Malkovich almost. It's odd with a purpose, I suppose.
Yeah. Why is there a door that goes to an opera house? I'm interested. Why is that there?
Yeah. So for context, guy wakes up, goes to a door, opens a door, goes in. No, and he's got a key finger. Goes into a door.
A finger for a key.
It's
a key for a finger.
Key for a finger. Looks over the theatre balcony, sees a naked baby run down the balcony, which then morphs into a dog walking down the balcony. Then he looks at the screen, and then there's a girl looking out of a window in a different scene. And then the film, it's mad. If it's just constant homage to 1920s French directors, then it's just boring anyway. It's not original. It's just him capturing things. There's loads of little short black and whites of muscular men with their penises out doing exercises. And it's just like, you're tribe.
Yeah.
And I hate to be so meh, but we're just going to keep saying that.
Yeah. But I think, again, there's going to be Carax loyalists that say, oh, you don't get it. Oh, it means this, it means that.
He's never given it definition, so you can't say it means shit.
Exactly. So you're just supporting him by proxy. You're supporting him because you want to be on record of saying, oh, he's really amazing. He's done nothing to prove that.
Yeah,
you have taken something away from the film and you have given it an identity. You have shaped a plot, a story, and you're saying he's a master for doing that. No, he's making you do all the work and you don't have a fucking clue if that's right or wrong. And that's lazy filmmaking.
Well, it's lazy because he relies on the beauty is in the eye of the beholder. So he looks at it as his art. Shouldn't artists talk about their art?
Yes.
Oh, go away.
Yes.
If you're not a filmmaker, don't put 17 bloody things together and go film.
Yeah.
Film. Anyone could do that.
It would be like us doing this podcast and then just saying the most random things. And then if someone listened back to it, it was like, what's that about? Oh, you decide.
Yeah.
You decide. But I thought you were a film podcast. Yes, we are a film podcast. But you didn't talk about film. You just spoke about...
We didn't bring our sewing kit.
Yeah. You could literally say anything and then say, oh, you decipher it. And then there would be people out there that go, well, maybe they mean this. Maybe they're talking about these societal issues. It's bollocks. It's
lazy. South Park did it, didn't they? So Butters writes a book in South Park called The Pea That Took a Poo or something. And everyone's like, it's the greatest thing. It's a social deconstruction of our times. The third book he releases is blank and it just says, fill it in yourself. And they go, it's his masterpiece.
Yes. That perfectly summarizes this whole film.
Yeah.
And there's, I've read reviews from professional film critics that I admire and I take value in what they say and I appreciate their opinion. And reading that before this, I was like, oh, it can't be another Annette. Annette might have been just something that wasn't for me. This one seems to be buttering up people in a better way, but a lot of people seem to respond to this one. Maybe it was the opera element of Annette that I didn't like. So I thought, I'll go into this, they're not going to have that monotone singing. I'm not going to feel disconnected because of that. Maybe there'll be a storyline and a plot and a meaning. Within 5 minutes, I was like, nope, this guy, me and Carax do not get on. And I knew that very early on.
I never got that of Annette. It was supposed to be a rock opera. Now, opera... It can be some of the most striking, most beautiful hair on your neck stand-up music ever. Just listen to Pavarotti when he does Nessun Dorma. It's incredible, right? The music in Annette is so off-putting. It's hard to even concentrate on what's actually going on screen, but you didn't need to. Guess what? It was nothing was going on screen. It's just nonsense.
Yeah.
Whingy comedian, Henry McHenry. Who named that guy?
Henry McHenry.
Henry McHenry. Chaz Michael Michaels had a purpose. He was a figure skater. Henry McHenry wears a dressing gown and goes, I hate life. Mm. I hate this feckin' film.
Did you like anything about Holy Motors?
I don't think you can deny Denis Levant's physicality. As a physical actor, why was Andy Serkis Gollum? This guy could have done a sick Gollum. Like, he's so physical. He's 5'2".
Is he 5'2"?
He is 5'2", and Kylie Minogue is 4'11".
Wow.
4'11".
They're small people.
Her and DeVito could go on a normal date.
Wow.
It's mad. But physically, I think he's excellent. And even he's got such a distinct face. I'd love to see him in some more conventional, I'd never thought I'd say this, more conventional Hollywood sort of films. Because I think he's full of talent.
Yeah.
And he is captivating, especially his character, Muad, who means shit. But you know that's a character from another film.
No.
So Carax did a three-director film. Him, Bong Joon-ho and Michael Gondry did a film called Tokyo. Each director had a segment of this film.
Okay.
And that was his submission to that film of Tokyo. It was Mert. His same actor, same characters, same green ginger beard, lives in a Tokyo underground. So he's taken one of his... I don't think Carax can do anything for more than 15 minutes.
Mm.
That's why you get almost a weird binding together of six or seven ideas, because he's not a long-term... He can't do an epic or anything. But he takes one of his most famous characters from Tokyo, a short, you know, his small part in the film, and then puts it in his Opus Dei, his greatest film.
Hmm.
Quotation fingers.
Yes, I can see,
So even that weren't original. And he puts himself in his own film. Who does that?
See, I would argue if the film was centred on Wirt... this character that Denny Levant plays within the film. If it was his story, for context, in this film, he's this dishevelled tramp, effectively. Really bright.
Sewer rat.
Yeah. Odd green suit, really strange red hair, a glass eye.
Eats flowers, eats fingers.
Yeah, picks up cigarette butts off the floor. Really, like, menacing, odd character. If the film was focused on him and how he became that...
Tokyo, yeah.
I would watch that. You know, I might have even enjoyed it, or at least not hated it as much as I hated this film.
Mm.
But it was just a small part of the film. But I do tend to agree with you. He was good in the film. I think he was, for me, really the only positive was his committed performance.
Yeah. Well, none of this is tied in, so I can't even give you context. But there's even a good scene in the car with his daughter where it's just a normal film scene almost, isn't it? They're talking about...
Yeah.
He's disappointed in her and stuff, and it's just kind of normal for a moment. And you see that he could actually just be... They could just write a really good French drama.
Mm.
Carax got absolutely nothing on Jean-Pierre Jeunet.
No. Yes. And that's a good point, actually. It makes me question his attention span. I relate it to like a puppy. If you put a puppy and you put a ball, a stick, a bone, and a frisbee on the floor...
That sounds like a Carax film.
It could be. It'd be more entertaining. Mm. But the puppy's going to be, what's this? And as an audience, that's quite disheartening, because you're like, well, let me focus on one thing before you shift to the next.
Yeah.
And this is, it's kind of an anthology, but it's not represented as an anthology. It's not synopsized as an anthology. It's not saying, oh, these are seven different stories, because it's Levant's character, Mr. Oscar. It's him throughout, just changing his personality, changing his appearance.
Yeah.
So it's not even an anthology. I don't even know. It's not an anthology.
It's relevant because it's true. Like, look at it like a food or music or toys. So if you were younger, is it better to love one toy and cherish it, or to have 10 and not play with any because they cancel each other
exactly
out?
Exactly that, yeah. That's the issue with his
film. Like, if you had 10 meals come your way, here's Mexican, here's pizza, here's that, you'd be like, I don't know what
to... what am I supposed to...
Which one should I
digest?
Enjoy the most?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Anything else you liked about the film?
I think in this hour and 55 minute interlude, the best part was the interlude. With the accordion scene in the church.
Yeah.
That was cool. Even if that character was the main one, the ball guy with the accordion, and he was busking around Paris.
Yeah.
And that would have been a good film, you know? It's like, he can't see Long Game ever. He's like, I'm distracted now, give me a black coffee so I can smell. And just, it's just, oh, it infuriates me.
Yes. I'm so happy you dislike this, because I watched this.
You refused to talk to me for days.
Well, yeah,
I wanted
because
to know.
If I spoke to you and you was one of the many people that seemed to love this film, I don't think I could have come here today.
No.
If I was speaking to you and you was like, I thought this was excellent, I'd be like, you know what, I'm cancelling. I'm not sitting here and listening to someone tell me how good this is.
No.
But if I was here and then you said, guess what, I love it, I'd have had to deal with it.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, okay, we're doing an episode in this. And it would end up with arguments, probably a punch up, and then a cuddle to...
Well, you thought similar to Annette, didn't you? Because you're getting fed online reviews and high critique of Annette, you were like, oh, okay, cool. You even said, oh, this might be good. And then you saw it, didn't like it, and you said, dude, if you like it, please don't attack me. I was like, I won't attack you. And obviously, I hated it.
Yeah.
Might say something about me and you. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. Listen, I'm not...
Own it.
Yeah, I'm not going to sit here and say that my opinion or your opinion is gospel. It's right. Everyone has their own opinion. They're entitled to their own opinion. And the people that love it, I'm happy for you. That's mm-hmm. great. I don't understand why people love it. I will never get my head around it. So if you do enjoy it, well done. I think you're lying to yourself, but if you do enjoy it, good for you. I just don't get it.
It's a lie. I don't see how that is possibly considered 16th best of the 21st century. It's insane. Surely you need to listen to your audience as well. It's insane. I don't see how general Joe public and even just, you know, good film fans have sat there and gone, excellent, 16th, 10th. No.
I feel those people, if they were being honest with themselves, like I said earlier, if they were being truly honest, they would turn around and say, you know what? I said I like this because I didn't want to appear stupid. Mm. I didn't want to be the guy that's like, oh, I just didn't get it. I thought it was crap. Because when you, like you say, when you've got so many voices saying, this is amazing, 16th best film of the 21st century is an incredible feat.
Mm-hmm.
If it was the most strangest films in the 21st century, this would probably be top of the list. It would definitely be up there. But best films? Bollocks.
It's not enough to be strange anymore. You can't just be strange.
No.
You can't just have an erection on the screen that looks like a cobra dancing to a flute.
It does, yeah. That happened in this film.
It was fierce.
Not cock cobra dancing, but there is, yeah, just a random erect penis in the film.
Yeah, Mert.
No, yeah, Mert again. Good old Mert. Just had a hard-on in the film. For no reason. Nothing's happened to warrant that boner.
Not an impossible feat with Eva Mendes. Like there, because exactly. She's a stunning looking woman.
Of course, beautiful
but
woman.
No context. Why is he turned on by eating flowers?
Yeah.
And dressing her, disguising all of her beauty, almost like, it was almost like a religious thing, wasn't it?
It's so odd. But the whole thing.
Because she's wearing a hijab? Hibib? Hibib. I think it's called a hibib. But she's covered everything. Her eye. And he covers her up and then makes her do a little walk in the tunnels. And then he gets a boner and then he goes to sleep. It's so weird. But
that's the thing, Harry. You just saying that. To anyone that doesn't know this film is going to be like, what is he saying? That is the film. Like, you might think we're talking bollocks. No, that is a true depiction of what happens on screen.
Mm.
There's no context. There's no relevance to this, to this, the boner or anything else within the film. And it's just mad.
Angriest boner I've ever seen.
Angriest boner I've ever seen too.
God.
Yeah. Any more likes?
We already covered it.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest... Out of your likes, I share two of them.
Hey.
So it goes to show that we're really scraping the barrel to find any positives in this. Top of my list, like yours, is Denis Levant. Like you said, in a film that I found very hard to follow, he was the one constant. And he showed his versatility in a number of different roles within the film. And I thought each character he played was the result of a dedicated and passionate performance.
Mm-hmm.
You have to credit the guy for that.
Yeah.
Because
it's like nine personas.
Yeah. And each one is uniquely different to the other.
Mm-hmm.
Some are extremely odd. Others are a little bit more grounded and something that you're more used to seeing. Like he plays in a cold-faced assassin within the film and you're like, okay, yeah, no, I understand that. He plays an old beggar woman and you're like, okay, no, he's doing a good job at portraying that as well. But you take away that performance, it would make the film pretty much impossible to watch.
Yeah, put Adam Driver in it.
Yeah, oh God. My second thing I liked about it is what I believe the film means. So it's almost self-indulgent, but my personal understanding, if it's right, if I have got it, if I've hit the nail on the head, ding, 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 then I like that because I've won, basically.
Mm-hmm.
I see this as a battle between me and Corax. He's like, you won't understand this. I was like, well, this is what I'm taking from it.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean I like the film, but I see I had to work pretty hard to get a grasp of what was going on. And as I say, I don't know if I'm correct, but I saw the film as one actor's life shown through the roles in which he plays. So in the film, he has 9 appointments and he turns up to each one. He's got a little portfolio of where he has to be. And I saw each appointment as an acting role. And if I'm correct in my translation, I find that an interesting idea.
So he's reliving his best parts?
Well, no, I just think in terms of this film... We're seeing an actor's life and you see the limousine in the film. It starts off, there's nothing in that. And as he goes to each appointment, more stuff fills the limousine.
Mm-hmm.
So I see it as an interpretation of experience built tools gained, expanding knowledge and repertoire. So if it is that, if I've looked into it and I'm correct, I would say that's a positive, because that is an interesting story, seeing the journey of an actor and what he picks up on his way and how he adapts, if that's correct.
So is it illusion that Kylie Minogue takes a header off a building?
Well, I believe in terms in the story, Kylie Minogue is going in a limo because she's another actor. Mm-hmm. And in the film, her character jumps off of a building. And I feel like in the film, that's one of her acting roles.
Murder-suicide.
So, yeah. So in this instance, in that scene of the film, she's playing a suicidal air hostess that jumps off.
So she doesn't actually die. Because she's wearing a costume underneath. Yeah. Oh, you're right. Yeah. So, and he said, I don't want to be here when he comes along. So he knew the scene was about to come up.
Yeah. So I that's how I see the film. So there's 9 appointments in the film. Each one, he's a different character. So I see it as this is the story of an actor taking on a different role, and how it must be difficult for an actor to be one week playing an old homeless woman, and then the next week playing an assassin, and then the next week playing a floating demon in a CGI game or film or something like that. And that's what I took away from it. Now, if I was wrong, I don't know what to think. I've watched it twice, as I said, and that's what I've taken away from it. If that's right, then that's a positive for me.
Because but that's generous,
I get what you're saying. Okay, I hold my hands up. Not a fan of your film, but now I understand it. I like that I've taken something away from it.
But because he refuses to answer questions or go in depth about his films, you'll never get that answer.
Well, exactly that. Exactly. And that left me feeling
frustrated. You can't trust the answer.
It left me feeling frustrated, cold. Listen, I could have finished this film and I could have gone on the internet and see what other people have said. But to be frank, I couldn't be bothered to give this film any more time than I've given it.
What do you think the difference is, say, between sticking with or not overly questioning, say, Nolan's Tenet and then, say, this?
Well, with Tenet, it is high concept, but there is a story there. There is a plot there. Mm. Now, the audience's ability to follow it wholeheartedly throughout the whole film is questionable.
It's just high intelligence, isn't it?
Yeah, it's high intelligence, and there is meaning. And you can watch that on face value and not have a clue what's going on, and it's still a spectacle. Mm-hmm. Looks great, it's performed great, it sounds great, it does all the right things. This, there's nothing. No. Like, it doesn't even look good. It's not particularly well shot. It's the best sounding part about it is the accordion interval.
In an old cathedral, it's lovely. Yeah.
And the Tenet thing, like you say, it's Christopher Nolan making a film, and even in the film itself, they say, don't try to understand, just go along with it. And it's high concept, it's ambitious, it's brave, it is telling a story, and I'm sure there's people out there that can better understand it who are more intelligent than I am and probably take more value from that. So I think Christopher Nolan, to me, is a master of filmmaking because he's always pushing boundaries. This isn't pushing boundaries. No. Like you said, it's almost laziness. It's absurdist. It's surrealist. It's just nonsense.
He should put his ideas on canvas or, like I said, just do physical theatre street performing, because essentially he's biting off way more than he can chew, and he's disguising it as art.
Yeah.
That's how I see it.
Yeah, if he was in a snooty French museum doing some abstract art where he's let bananas mold for ages and then painted him on a canvas and then shat in the middle and rolled around in it. And people going, oh, that's amazing. It talks about this, that, and the other. I could see him doing that. I'd be like, oh yeah, okay, cool. Not my cup of tea, not really here for that, but I understand some people do.
There's a high probability he has done something like that.
Of course he has. He's an oddball, that's for sure. And my last thing I liked about it is same as yours, man, just the accordion crew. The film has an interval, and in this much-needed break, a posse of accordion players come into shot and are joined by a big band that creates a genuinely fun moment with real musical talent. Now, I think it speaks to the film's quality if one of my favourite things is the interval.
Yeah.
It really does.
The whole film's an interval, yeah. But that is the best interval of the film.
And it sounds great, doesn't it? I love the sound of the accordion. There's probably, 5 or 6 accordion players, then some drummers come in, guitarists. It sounds, it's really energetic. It's really good.
I love it when he shouts them in halfway through. He goes, 3, 12, shit.
Yes.
So, not 1, 2, 3. He goes, 3, 12, shit. Why? Because it's a Carax film.
Yeah, exactly that. Can you tell me what you didn't like about the film?
Director putting himself in the opening of the film, waking up from bed. It's so ego, it's so nauseating and ineffective. And it's just to be meta. look, here's me in my own film at the start of the film, opening the door to the cinema to the dog with the naked baby with the girl looking out the window. It's like, fuck.
That sentence.
Come on. I hate it. You know I don't like it when directors put themselves in their own films. Yeah. It's a hard pill to swallow, if it's, and especially if it's done badly. Shyamalan's guilty of it, or M. Night Shyamalan. He does it a lot, and it's not. It's just like off-putting. It's like, no, no. It is a, for me, it's a breaking of the fourth wall, and the fact that he put himself in his own film, it's that alone should have bumped that down to 60 or 70 if in 2022 in 21st century films.
It should not be in that be, film no. at all.
But the fact that he's in his own film. He's so egotistical. His interviews are so cringy to listen to. He's literally the guy with his leg crossed and a scarf going, it's because of the love we have for our daddy. It's like, it's so, he finds things that no one is looking for. He's just trying to be different rather than it naturally occurring. He annoys me.
Yeah. The thing is, I understand there's shock directors out there. There's horror directors that are looking to push boundaries with the shock you see on screen. I don't always agree with that, but I can understand that more than someone like Leos Carax. I can understand that because he's trying to say something. Not only do I not know what he's trying to say, but I honestly don't think he has a fucking clue what he's trying to say either. I don't think he's trying to say anything. I think he's just trying to be, he is a very insecure man who's trying to show the world, look how original I am.
He's serving soup with pieces of Lego in it. He has got issues.
That is a problem.
Don't feed people Lego when they after soup.
Exactly, yeah. Any more dislikes about the film?
Well, he's got a black square on his back, hasn't he? Of course he has. Why not?
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah.
So pre-Cobra bonus scene, Dennis Levant takes his top off and there's a black square on his back.
Yeah.
No explanation. Don't know why. He wants you to think about it. He's distracting you all the time, I think. He's distracting you from focusing on the lack of narrative. And that's what he's doing. Why is there a black square on that guy's back?
I believe the black square on his back represents that his character is allergic to soy sauce.
Oh, yeah. Because his mum didn't feed him when he was younger.
Yeah.
Breast milk.
Yeah. And right. From the mum's teat, she somehow provided soy sauce.
Yeah.
And he had so much nipple soy sauce that he built up an intolerance and now can't have soy sauce. So he got a square tattooed on his back, the size of his whole back, to tell the world that he can't have soy sauce. It's pretty obvious when you think about it.
I thought it represented the desire in Paris for croque monsieur at lunch.
Well, that is another, that's a very interesting take, and I completely see why you would go that route.
No, soy nip, bet. Let's go with that one.
Yeah. But listen, that's nonsense. That minute nonsense between me and Harry was just perfectly summarizes the whole film. Like that is literally what you can do throughout this whole film. You can put forward just a total train wreck of sentences and say that's what it means, and then just push it out from the front of you and just go, "Yep, that's what it means."
How easy is that to do?
It's ridiculous, yeah. Man. Yeah,
so easy.
Any more dislikes?
Just the whole experience. To be honest, just feeling left out as an audience member is the worst thing you can do to your audience.
I have never felt closer to you.
Yeah. Just being sidelined so he can suck himself off on screen, essentially. Yeah. It's nonsense.
See, I was worrying yesterday and I was thinking, if I sit here and he loves this film, I do not know where this episode's going to go. Because it would end up being inaudible because we'd be shouting at each other. So yeah. I'm very, very happy we're on the same page.
Yeah.
Now I'll go on to my dislikes, but I've got to take into consideration we don't have 2 months to go over it.
Of course.
But top of the list is just tedious. I spent most of this fucking film trying to figure it out. With such little context and with so much absurdism, I found it difficult to get through the whole film. I ended up making my own story to try and make sense of it all. And by the end, I was just pissed off with a director that has put me through both this and Annette. As I mentioned earlier, I tried really hard to connect with Holy Motors Man, but I just couldn't. And the whole film, again, watching it the second time, I was just like, why am I doing this? Why am I doing this?
Well, the best parts of his films are the trailers.
Yeah.
Because they lead you to believe that you're about to watch something great. You even thought that of Annette. You said, oh, man, it looks mad.
Yeah,
the trailer
looks incredible.
Yeah, the ship in the ocean and the madness.
Yeah, yeah.
And then there's no essence. There's no belly to his work. None at all.
Yeah. And yeah, that's the thing. I think it's a real problem when you watch a trailer and then you watch the film and you know exactly the same amount as you did when watching the trailer.
Yeah.
I haven't watched that and be like, oh, so that's what I still don't have a fucking idea. So I'm so clueless to the fact that I've made up my own story within the film and I'm just going, oh, well, that's what it means then. Which, just to try and find some iota of acceptance mm-hmm. and understanding. Yeah. That I don't normally get riled up about films, but this one really did piss me off.
It's healthy.
Yeah. Second dislike, I was mildly aroused by the CGI floaty demon creatures
yeah.
that were fornicating in midair. I judge myself for this.
He likes Conolingus, didn't he, Carax?
Yeah.
It appears in both films. When Adam Driver sings into Coulthard's box, and in this one, isn't he like licking the red latex of the actual pubic bone of this woman who's dancing? Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not anti-cunny in any way, shape or form.
Hmm.
But in the film, there's one of the appointments that Mr. Oscar, played by Danny Levant, has. He's in a room doing CGI, and he's got the black suit on with all the, like, what are they, monitors?
They're like digital points.
Yeah, that's...
So you you can take on the skeletal CGI of a body.
And it starts off and he's doing martial arts and stuff, and that was quite cool. And then this beautiful woman comes in a red latex suit, and they start mimicking really
69
convoluted sexual acts and stuff. And I was watching it and I was like,
it's sexy.
And then it turns into CGI floaty demons,
snaky demons,
and the arousal didn't go. I was still like, I'm still into this.
That's cool, man. Well, spiders are your fear, so maybe snakes are your friends.
Yeah, but don't get me wrong. I didn't have to pause the film to go and have some alone pleasure time or anything. But I was watching it and going, these are two demon floaty things, fucking, and I don't want this to stop.
That's probably intentional, knowing Carax, though. He probably thought, right, I'm going to show you something really promiscuous, really naughty, S&M is going to get you going. And now, just look to your right.
Yeah,
here's some weird CGI demon snakes. You're just as weird as me, Adam.
Yeah.
And that's what Carax is doing. He's going to mess you with your brain, dude.
And that's why it's one of my dislikes. And I think I was trying so hard to find value that I ended up liking two demons fucking in the sky.
Yeah. Yeah. I was still there by the time the chimps came into shit scene.
Okay. And then it stopped, did it?
It stopped there.
Okay, that's good to know. And my final dislike, again, I hated it so much. I nearly turned it off twice. I pride myself for being able to sit through almost anything. I watched this fucking film twice, and I would have rather had my wisdom teeth put back in and then removed again.
Mm.
I've wasted 4 hours of my life on this and wasted 2 hours of my life on Annette, and I now have a personal vendetta against Leos Carax.
Well, you haven't wasted it. You've cultured yourself with what works, what doesn't work. He doesn't work.
Yeah, and now I found out I've got a kink for CGI floaty demon creatures.
You'd probably be able to find that if you needed to purge that thought.
It's out there.
It's out there. Oh, guaranteed, confirmed.
No, I don't know, really.
If Carax did a film in 2 years and the trailer came out, do you think you would watch it just to reaffirm yourself?
No.
That's so unlike you.
I know.
You watch anything.
He could have every actor I hold dear in my heart in a film, and it could have rave reviews from everyone that's watched.
Well, it will do by proxy.
But I will not allow myself. My life is too short to put more Carax in it.
Do you know he wants to do a superhero movie?
Oh, he can fuck off.
But not a superhero that's a superhero. So he doesn't want to do a superhero movie, but he says he wants to do a superhero movie.
What does this mean?
He means a superhero that doesn't do anything, that just like sits in his house and doesn't. He's not an American superhero. He wants to do like a Polish superhero. It was in that Q&A on IndieWire that he did with Con.
I would watch a Polish superhero film.
Just not by him.
But I would not watch a film from him ever again. Unless I was getting paid handsomely. Or just adequately.
Could be a good one down the line.
I would do it for money. I would do it for money.
Who wouldn't? I'd do anything for money.
Well, you heard it here first. I've got some questions. Where does Holy Motors rank in your list of strangest films?
Strange is a hard one because I've seen weird films. Like Society is a weird film, but it's gripping. It's shite, but it's a weird one. Society is a strange film. Even Man Bite Dogs is a strange film, but it's a comedy. It's a dark comedy budget film. It's gripping. It's funny. It catches me there. So strange. I almost don't want to give him the credit of saying this is the strangest film I've ever seen, because I think he enjoys that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's to date in my brain, it is the strangest film I've seen.
Yeah.
To date.
See, after coming up with that question, I had a real think, and I can't think of anything that tops it. Now, there's strange films out there that you could say strange because, like this, it's quite surreal. There's surreal elements to it.
Lamb's a strange film.
Yeah, Lamb is a strange film, but it's steeped in folklore, nursery rhymes, and all of that.
Miscarriage.
Losing babies. It's a Scandinavian folklore tale that we don't necessarily understand, but obviously the Scandinavian's going to know what it is representing. So there's purpose to that. And I think absurdism and surrealism in film can help tell a story. Like Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas is a very strange story, but it's trying to show the audience what it would be like to be on an absolutely mental cocktail of Class A drugs.
Yeah.
So it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But because it makes no sense, and because each scene is as odd as the last, if not odder, I consider it probably the strangest film I've ever seen. Yeah,
I'd say it's the most overrated film I've ever seen.
Yeah, God, yeah.
And I thought Annette was the most overrated film I'd ever seen. Fury was an overrated film in my opinion. It got way too much kudos for some shitty acting, but we're not on Fury. Yeah, most overrated film, and strange just because I think it was intended that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a nightmare film, isn't it?
Question mark film.
Yeah. This film is both highly rated and critically acclaimed. Please, can you tell me why?
The main character is called Oscar.
It's Mr. Oscar.
Mr. Oscar. It's like a nod to the Oscars as well. There's all these little like, oh, give me an award. He's laughing to himself in a locked room somewhere. He goes into his room, he locks a door and just cracks up because he's pulled the walls over everyone's eyes.
You know what? If that's the case, I respect him more for that.
Well, yeah.
It's like how Nicolas Cage is in on the own, on
his own joke.
Own joke, yeah. And I have a level of admiration for that. If he's making these films and behind closed doors to his nearest and dearest are going, I can literally shit anything out and they say it's amazing. This is hilarious. Yeah. I'd have mad respect.
Yeah.
But if he's not, then I question him.
I
question anyone that thinks this film's amazing.
He said it himself, I'm not a filmmaker.
He is not a filmmaker.
Thank you for being honest. Thank you for being so honest.
Now retire.
Please.
And just leave it alone.
Retire. Go and do your Nana thing.
Yeah, go and do your Pooh Nana canvas.
Yeah, let it depreciate, roll in
it. Yeah, have a great time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Leave cinema for the real filmmakers.
Ooh.
I love French cinema, and I know you are a fan too. I consider this to be the worst French film I have ever seen. What do you consider to be your favourite French film?
Oh, Incendies, Amelie.
Great.
Deerskin's great.
Great.
And Man Bites Dog. I love all of them.
Yeah.
Man Bites Dog, I think, is Belgian, but you can say it's French.
Yeah.
Essentially.
Yeah.
All great, and so many more to watch.
Yeah.
So many more. Excited about. I love French cinema. Mm. Well, the ones I've seen, I love.
Yeah.
This is the first one I've truly disliked.
And that's it. There's a level of reputation with French cinema. There's a few exciting French filmmakers that are up and coming at the moment. And by proxy, before I saw Annette, I thought, oh, this is another French filmmaker I've not heard anything about. Well, people seem to love it, and I was excited. I was like, oh, it's going to be another one that joins the likes of Amelie and Incendies, of being a really interesting discovery of cinema that I don't know a great deal about, but I've loved what I have discovered. And it's just gone completely the wrong way. Mm-hmm. Like, it's it's the first French film I think I've seen that I was like, this is trash.
For me, there's no end product that shows that there was effort put into this story. So when you watch Amelie, it's so well made, so well written. It's so generous to its audience with visual and audio, and it's so like intelligent. It's a really good film, and it's the beauty of like that what I see as French cinema. You know, they really are. The language should be overly expressed because it's a beautiful language and stuff. And in Carax's Holy Motors, I'm not even wowed by the French language in it. I'm not wowed by the French scenery in it. Nothing's alluring in it at all. Why the hell is Kylie Minogue in it?
I guess she's not getting many acting roles now.
Yeah, but he actively sort of pursues strange castings. I don't get why Adam Driver or Coulthard, after seeing Holy Motors, would want to even be in Annette.
My, fuck knows.
Howard Wolowitz from Old Big Bang Theory, he went and got something like French citizenship so he could appear in Annette. I didn't understand why.
I don't get it, man. Again, this may just be something that's above our pay grade and we're just not getting, but I struggle to believe that because we're both, first and foremost, film lovers.
Hmm.
And this is not a film I love or even like. Or even dislike. I actively hate this film.
Yeah.
I really dislike the director that made it.
There, maybe giving our age and the time that we've been on this earth, film to us is set in this, it's bookended with...
Well, it's almost sacrilege, isn't it?
Well, yeah, there's narrative, there's the idea, there's the plot, there's the character, like character arcs development. So when you get a film like this, which was obviously all you had in the 20s and 30s was little showpieces all put together to show you, wow, look at, this is how a camera works. This is motion capture. It was experimenting. And I think that's what Crax tries to do. He talks about his love for real cameras when they were bigger than we are. Like, he used to say cameras were bigger than the person, and now they're the size of a head. And he's annoyed by it, but he did a film with little cameras, with digital cameras, and he put it out there to get famous. But and he's a weird liberal lefty as well. He's strange about how he references, oh, one of those rich cities. Dude, you're one of the snobbiest, most self-indulged, egotistical snob I know.
Yeah.
We got to stop hitting on him. Yeah. This is just becoming...
Should we wrap it up then?
It's becoming an hate speech.
Okay. What would you rate Holy Motors out of 10?
2.
Same as me, man.
Oh, sweet.
Same as me, yeah. I think I've got to be honest. I think that's, if I'm being true to myself, I think that's generous.
Nothing will ever be lower than that.
I really doubt it. I really, really doubt it. That gives Holy Motors a total score of 4 out of 20.
Can I just apologise for suggesting it?
Listen, I'm glad we've done an episode. I'm more glad that we are on the same page as this, because otherwise, fuck knows how this episode would have turned out. But yeah, my advice to anyone listening, just don't fucking bother. Just don't bother.
Yeah.
If you like your films tedious and nonsensical, or if you like to pretend you enjoy shit films hiding under the guise that it is art, then Holy Motors could be a film for you. Consider watching this one if you enjoyed Annette, The Fisher King and Mulholland Drive.
What's The Fisher King? Why did I know this? I'm going to have a look at that.
Yeah.
I'm going to research that one after.
Is it Robin Williams? I think it's Robin Williams.
Oh, God.
It is a strange one.
Fisher King.
I'm sure it's Robin Williams or Tim Robbins. I forget now.
It's related to Crax, who cares?
Yeah. Should we play a game?
Yeah.
The game in question is What the Plot, where the rules are simple and the results quite the opposite. Harry will conceive an original idea from his big and beautiful brain and give birth to a plot. It's then down to me to nurture this thought by providing a film title, genre, cast, and anything else I can think of to raise this brainchild into a fully functioning film concept. Over to you, Harry.
Did you know 8,000 years ago, a squirrel could travel from Land's End to John O'Groats without touching the floor? That's how much forest we had.
No.
And this is... the beginning of this story.
Hang on, how long does that squirrel travel? How far did he travel without touching the ground? So
the furthest southwest of England to the most northern part of Scotland, it could travel.
So North England to Scotland?
No, South England all the way to northern Scotland.
Oh, right. Okay.
Without touching the floor. That's how much forest we had 8,000 years ago.
Okay.
And so our story begins.
God. Okay.
The evil grey squirrel, Scrotal scent,
what?
Purged the south of all red squirrels apart from one last bastion of little tribe of them.
Wait, hang on. You're going to have to slow down there.
Their last leader...
No, wait. What is the evil squirrel called again?
Scrotal scent.
Scrotal scent.
Yeah, he's the evil grey squirrel.
Okay.
They came over. They came over from France on a boat called Leo Carax, and they invaded the South of England. And they committed a purge. They genocide. They genocide hard on red squirrels. Okay. Now the last tribe, the last leader of the red squirrels is called. Let's call him Cinnamon Muff.
Okay, you're going to have to slow down because I can't keep up here.
Cinnamon Muff leads his tribe north to freedom and away from the purge of Scrotal Scent. On the trees, without touching the floor.
Right,
Yep.
I've only got small parts of that.
Okay, give more.
So 8,000 years ago, a squirrel could travel from South England to North Scotland.
Without touching the floor.
The evil grey squirrel, called Scrotal Scent, came over on a boat called Leo Carax.
Yeah.
They tried to...
They purge the red squirrels. They kill them. Genocide.
Okay.
It's an ethnic cleansing of red squirrels in the south of England.
Okay. And Cinema Muff is the last remaining...
Cinema Muff is the leader of the last few red squirrels, and he migrates north and to escape the genocide of Scrotal Scent and his grey squirrel hordes.
Is this Braveheart with squirrels?
No.
Okay.
That's Scottish and English.
Okay.
This is... This is Native Americans being pushed west by the Yanks.
Okay.
Yeah. Think of it like that.
Have you got anything else?
Did I mention that the red squirrel is called Cinnamon Muff?
Cinema or cinnamon?
Cinnamon.
Cinnamon.
It's because cinnamon's red, isn't it? It's a rougey colour. So Cinnamon Muff.
Okay.
And Scrotal Scent. Grey and red are very prolific in this, I should imagine.
Okay.
And he heads north. Tribe head north. And to escape this genocide. Yeah. It's like Schindler's List with squirrels.
Okay. Anything else for me? Because I'm not going to lie, I'm struggling.
Animation?
Well, yeah, that's as much as I had got.
Yeah.
I would see this as a
voice acting job, isn't it?
As an animated film.
Yeah.
And but I see it as like an almost...
He's a good bad guy for Scrotal Scent.
It's almost like a... What a sentence. Who's the bad guy for Scrotal Scent? All right. Okay. So, yeah, as you say, I saw this as a animated. I'm not just jumping on your bandwagon. I can see
that. When you said you needed help, I thought maybe if I said that, it would help.
Mm.
I thought you were imagining James Corden in a squirrel suit.
Oh, God. I would not want to.
Cats 2. 2.
I would not want to see that.
No one would. Big fat pussy.
Right, so really quick summary. 8,000 years ago, a squirrel could travel from South England to North Scotland.
Trailer, nay.
Evil grey squirrel, Scrotal Scent, came over on a boat called Leo's Carax and purged the red squirrels. Cinnamon Muff is the last remaining red squirrel, and he rallies the troops to fight the grey squirrels.
No, he migrates north to escape the purge.
Okay, he... escapes.
If you go to Scotland, particularly Aviemore, you can still see wild red squirrels. You'll rarely ever, ever, ever see them in the south.
Okay.
So it's kind of steeped. In fact, it's kind of also a subtext to the world and climate change, because the deforestation, if you could travel from a tree from the south to the north of Scotland, that's all gone. It's now like 1%.
Okay.
Whereas it used to be 40 or 50.
Okay.
There's lots going on.
So he's not trying to fight the evil grey squirrel Scrotal Scent.
He fights when he has to.
But he's just trying to survive.
Migrate, yeah. He's outnumbered, outgunned.
Okay.
Native Indians getting pushed west. The Trail of Tears.
Is he sort of trying to find any remaining red squirrels to, like, sort of save his race?
Maybe he finds some up in Scotland.
Okay.
Yeah. But he's got to move his tribe from the south to north.
So I see, as you say, this is an animated film, but I don't see it as an animated film for kids.
No.
I would have it quite dark. Watership. I'd have it, Watership down, but yeah, CGI maybe, nice. And have it dark. Yeah. And directing it, it's not a director known for any sort of...
animation.
No, he is known for animated films, but he's not known for the more adult, grittier films. Mm-hmm. It's Brad Bird, the director of Incredibles and Iron Giant.
Oh, sweet.
So he's got experience in the animated world.
It would look good like Iron Giant.
And yeah, and maybe just him venturing into more adult themes would be interesting. And in the role of Scrotal Scent, I would have Christian Bale as a menace grey emperor squirrel.
Would he gain weight?
Probably for the role, yes.
Yeah.
Even though he's just voice acting, he has to put on 6 stone.
Groot.
Yeah. And playing Cinnamon Muff is, I'd have Tom Holland.
Young, energetic.
Young, energetic, likable, lovable.
Yeah.
And it would be Christian Bale and versus Tom Holland, basically. And I'd call the film Red Rising.
Squirrels run and squirrels are free. Loving nuts high up in the trees.
Sit down, Cinnamon Muff. I need to tell you of an ancient prophecy a terrible fate. But Papa, me and my friends were going to go foraging in Badger's chuff.
My boy, a great surge is coming. There will be no Badger's chuff if you do not heed my warning.
The only difference between them and us is the colour of our fur. Peoples feed them, but they treat us like the common rat. The age of Red Squirrel must end. Grey will be great. We are superior. The peoples will see. They will treat us as pets, not pests.
Scruntle scent, we won't repent. Scruntle scent, we won't repent.
We will rise until we are free. Coming soon to a cinema near ye.